Greetings and welcome to the Executive MBA Podcast. My name is Whitney Kessner and I am going to be your host for today. Surprise, surprise, we're turning the tables and I am here today. Our special guest is Brett Twitty. We are going to spend this time learning a little bit more about Brett, and all in celebration of the 50th podcast. So this Executive MBA podcast has really taken off over the last several months. We've had some incredible guests from throughout the Darden Enterprise. And so today, we thought we'd change things up a little bit and bring you the man that has been leading this podcast and like I said, learn a little bit more about him. So welcome, Brett.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Whitney. It's a pleasure to be on this side of the microphone.
Congratulations on 50.
Who would have thought we'd make it this far? Gary Peters is to thank for the Exec MBA podcast. Got to give him a quick shout out. He's also the inspiration for our 50th episode, the Interview the Interviewer episode, as it will come to be known. So it's fun being here with you today and talking like we so often do. You've been on the podcast.
I have, but it's these are big shoes to fill. So I am feeling the nerves this morning thinking through what are going to be those questions that are really going to get at the heart of the matter.
I can't wait to see what those might be.
All right. Well, how about, so 50 episodes.
50 episodes.
I would really love to hear, what have been some of your favorites over the last couple months?
I will answer this both very broadly and then maybe a little bit more specifically. So it's been fun just being able to sit with people and talk with them about their experiences, their stories. A lot of the conversations have revolved around why Darden.
Right.
And obviously people I knew as prospective students and being sort of both proximate but also somewhat removed from that decision-making process to be able to sit with that person and hear why he or she came to Darden. That's been fun. Also really, I have a passion for entrepreneurship. I've become very interested in entrepreneurship, working with our executive format students and just being here
right. As
a business school. And I think Darden has a really powerful story to share around entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial resources, and it's been great having that be a topic that we've explored on the podcast. But really, a lot of it comes down to what makes Darden great in the first place, mm-hmm. the people, and just having time to sit and hear someone's story. Obviously, incredibly generous of folks to take time out of their day, 20, 30 minutes at a time, and sit and answer all these questions. And so to me, the fact that we've made it to 50 episodes is a testament to the community that we have here, because I view this as a very much a shared enterprise. It's not just me in a room. It's always me and another person.
Right. Well, congratulations. Now, I think you've done an incredible job of bringing these voices out through the podcast. And yes, glad you gave Gary a shout out in helping make all of this happen. But I think it has been a really neat way to highlight these different members of the community, give them this platform to share and to help your listeners learn more about Darden.
Yeah, I think the fun thing about it is it takes a village,
yeah.
right, for executive MBA students to both matriculate, and then once they're here, the full program experience is delivered by staff, faculty, it's facilitated by classmates, all these
right.
kinds of things make Darden what it is. And so one of the great things about the podcast has been that's a platform for people to meet all the many people that make the executive MBA program here at Darden what it is. And so that's been fun, talking with faculty and students, but also program team members and hearing what they love and are passionate about, working with students and of course talking with admissions colleagues and CDC colleagues. I think the career piece is such an important part of the decision to come to school for so many of our students, both full-time, residential, as well as executive format. And so to be able to sit with Jim and Sarita and Connie and Casey Floyd and mm-hmm. hear why they're passionate about what they do and hear their advice for students, I always find it enriching and totally informative because they spend so much time talking with students
right.
on their goals and their paths and how they're going to get to that next thing.
So we're here in the Darden Media Studio in Charlottesville, Virginia. But this isn't the only place where you have conducted some podcast interviews. Can you share a little bit more about when you've taken it on the road, some of the more interesting locations?
So if you've listened to all 50 episodes, you may wonder sometimes, gosh, it sounds like they're recording in a glass-paneled conference room. Can that be? I would figure Darden would have a formal studio. And yes, that is true here in Charlottesville, but certainly in Roslyn, we've had to be a little bit more enterprising. Mm-hmm. We've used conference rooms. We've used learning team rooms. We've even recorded in sort of more of a multi-purpose space, anywhere that we could find a corner that seemed reasonably quiet. Right. And so in a lot of ways, the episodes and the location of the episodes have tracked our story in D.C. The first episodes were recorded really in Waterview, which is the shared conference space that we were using when we were delivering the program up there for roughly the first year and a half that we had a D.C. area location. And then recorded some in the 29th floor office we had at 1100 Wilson Boulevard, which is really our small start in having a more formalized space.
Right.
And then have recorded a bunch of interviews, obviously, at Sands Family Grounds on the 30th and 31st floor of 1100 Wilson Boulevard. And so for me, I think it's been great to sort of experience that groundswell of, okay, so we started here with this idea, and then we have 60 students, right, in that first class, and then we had 66 students in the next class that could choose between D.C. and Charlottesville. And we had, ultimately, this year, we had 75 students in the Roslyn section. Obviously, all those numbers are Roslyn section specific, but
right.
You start to feel, you know, sort of this momentum.
Sure.
And feel like the podcast, we try to tell that story as well, but you also see it in the investment that the school has made in the D.C. area. I mean, we could have continued to deliver classes out of Waterview, but it was important to have our own grounds there. And so now we have 40,000 square feet at the top of an office tower. And I always encourage prospective students, if for no other reason, come by for the view.
Sure.
How often do you get to see all of D.C.? We overlook Washington, D.C. You can see the National Cathedral from where we are. You can see Iwo Jima. You can see Reagan. You know, all points, southwest, east, north. And so you know, it's obviously a beautiful space. Very proud of it.
I'm guessing it would be difficult to be on the rooftop for the podcast.
There is a brand new space up there. That's
okay.
Right. I just opened on the 32nd floor, which is the roof. So don't never say never.
You're
on the Exec NBA podcast for sure.
Make that a reality.
Yeah,
so.
It's a beautiful space too. And, you know, I would say, I think the thing that's been fun, I mean, so we've had exec MBA classes in the new space since March or so, but we're now getting to the point where the space is fully finished, right? And we're now bringing art in, but all the other, you know, the two classrooms are finished, the flat classrooms are finished, and we will only start to feel more and more settled there, which it's been great just having that opportunity for prospective students to come and see, like, wow, Darden is serious about being here in D.C. for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great, Brett. Well, so you've been at Darden how many years now?
About 3.5.
3.5 years.
I joke that sometimes it seems a little bit longer than that because so much has happened.
I know.
Right? So when I first started, it was February 2015.
Okay.
Which is like right in the thick of things.
Oh, I remember it both, well.
Both full-time and exec. And then I think around October, November of that year, got called into a meeting that said, hey, we're thinking about launching a section up in D.C. and D.C. area, and we're investigating that, and we're thinking about integrating the formats. So right around the time I had gotten really comfortable with IMBA versus GIMBA and how to talk about everything, I got called into that meeting. I thought, oh, well, that's another good opportunity. And I can remember the first event I ever went to was at Tyson's Corner.
Well, and you hadn't actually officially started. He was still working for his former institution.
That's right. But
we
took an evening.
I know.
And got to hang out with Jeannie Beeler.
I think you were
Whitney
making
Kessner.
Calls while you were.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was
during the breaks, still doing two jobs.
That's right. Two jobs. But it was fun being there. But I always think about that event when I think about the next event that was sort of a large event that we did in D.C. in February of 2016. Because the event at Tyson's was really nice, but it was probably about 40 people or so, 35, 40 people. And then the February of 2016, we found ourselves in this large ballroom, Mandarin Oriental Hotel in Washington, D.C. And there were like 200 people. I mean, it's enormous. Yeah. And to me, that was very powerful in sort of shifting my thinking that there is a difference for some people in the D.C. area between being, you know, in Roslyn and being, you know, 2.5 hours away in Charlottesville. All of a sudden we were in the conversation for a student we may have otherwise missed.
No, you're exactly right.
And so I always thought about those two events in connection.
In contrast.
Yeah. And so obviously the past couple of years or so have been really busy, you know, working to fill the class across both Charlottesville and Roslyn. And, you know, I think as a program, we feel like we have a lot of momentum, great leadership. Jim Dieter has brought a tremendous amount of energy, and he's been on the podcast already. We're actually going to have him on the podcast again. And so, you know, I think you've got Jim, you've got a great program team. You have Barbara Millar, Callie Thompson, Kathy Masloff, Ann Ward, Cheryl McGuff, just fantastic people who work to support our students. And it feels like collectively everything's trending very much in a positive direction. So it's exciting to be part of that story.
Great. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about what you did before joining Darden.
Well,
so I think way back when, maybe some fast food experience. Is that right, Brett?
I always tell people, from a customer service standpoint, the most informative job I ever had was working at Chick-fil-A. For a variety of reasons. They told us this one thing, and I don't even know if it's true. I don't think it matters if it's true necessarily, but it feels true. So they told us, first training I ever went to, this is give you a sort of scale. I made $4.35 an hour. It's like one of these stories where I walked uphill both ways.
Yeah.
You know, made $4.35 an hour, and they had this deal where if you went to these training sessions, you would get a nickel raise.
Wow.
So, this first training session was really rooted in customer service. And they told us if someone has a positive experience with you, they might tell one person. If someone has a negative experience, they tell at least 9 people.
Okay.
So you think about that within the context of, you know, fast food or any service. And I mean, essentially we're in a customer service business. So you think about that, and you think about how every action you have can shape someone's perception, not just of you as a person, but the larger brand and program and all that kind of stuff. I think that certainly has always stuck with me. I had a lot of restaurant industry jobs. I've definitely, you know, learned and grown from those. I think in a lot of ways, I've benefited from having really great bosses all through my career. I mean, certainly moving past fast food, but worked in higher education for now 12 years.
Yeah.
And I view this as like almost an accidental career. I was never one of those people who, you know, had that mindset of like, oh, I want to go get a master's in education and I want to work in higher ed. I took a job at W&L Law after graduating there. I mean, briefly lived in Atlanta and then came back. I was going to work in admissions for 2 years.
Right.
I said I was just going to do this for a couple of years. And 2 years became 3. And then I kind of thought, well, maybe I want to go do Teach for America or Peace Corps or something. And kind of went through that process and got to the end of it and thought, well, I had this other opportunity at W&L to run the admissions office. And I've been kind of working towards this. Well, why don't I do that? And so ran the admissions office there for 2 years. And then after that, had a chance to serve as dean of students, which was, to me, really, really impactful and amazing. I grew a lot as a person. It's probably easily the most challenging job I'd ever had. You see people on the best day, and you see people on their worst day. And I got to work on a lot of different things. It's a pretty lean organization, so the job itself had a lot of scope. So I've done everything from ice cream breaks to writing academic policy.
Yeah.
I'll let you guess which one of those I enjoy more. You know, I like to believe that I was somewhat responsible for Free Popcorn Wednesday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't know if I'd heard about Free Popcorn Wednesday.
Yeah, you know, these are the things that really, really matter. But in student affairs, you got to have a little bit of that because, you know, you're oftentimes, you know, enforcing policy or helping people understand, well, this is the landscape. You can do this. You can't do that.
Right.
But I was involved in the student government when I was a law student. So it was great to come back and work closely with students. I got to work with just a tremendous group of students. They were all fantastic people. And I learned a lot through that role, but ultimately missed being in admissions.
Right.
There's nothing quite like, you know, the relationships you get to develop with prospective students as much student interaction as I had as a dean of students, I ultimately missed being at admissions and was looking to grow. And somewhat similar to our business school students who come to Darden because they want to sort of take that next step, I came to Darden because I wanted to take the next step. And so started working on executive format recruitment, and the rest is history. I'm here doing a podcast interview now.
Exactly.
Who would have thunk it? So.
And for those listeners, just in case you missed it, yes, he does have his JD, but he's
a long way from it. People always ask me, "What do you do with that?"
I'm like, "You provide great advice, that's for sure."
I probably know a little bit more about grammar than a lot of people, but
you bring a good perspective. Oftentimes help balance out situations.
It's somewhat similar to the training that our students get here at Darden. It just gives you a framework for thinking about problems. You never quite shed that. And even if you're not practicing law, you still, your brain goes to the, well, how could this go maybe not so well? You know, you think about all the different scenarios. I think it ultimately that training is about sort of scenario planning and thinking about the four or five plus different things that could happen and trying to have a game plan for each thing. And, you know, obviously, I worked at W&L, the law school, for a long time and spent 11 years in Lexington, Virginia. And so I have a lot of really good memories there. So I still have a lot of friends. I was just there not so long ago. Now, when I visit, I take the train to Stanton. It makes me feel like a
big time.
Big time.
Yes, you moved from Lexington to the booming metropolis of Charlottesville.
That's right.
And then moved to D.C., which is where you are now.
Yeah, I live in DuPont Circle, 17th Street, for those of you who are familiar with it. It's a great place. I'm a big walker.
Yeah,
I like to ride my bike.
Public transportation.
Yes, I live near both the DuPont Circle station, Farragut North, Farragut West. And you got so many options. I like to ride my bike around. A couple public libraries. I mean, what else could you want?
All right there. Well, you talked about essentially falling into admissions and that never being the plan. But I can definitely say that I have learned so much from you. Your dedication to our students is incredible. Your responsiveness, your encouragement, your helping them understand the potential that they have and how they can really amplify their impact through the Darden MBA. A lot of this experience is around not just learning the technical aspects of business, but it's further refining your leadership, your communication, your team skills. And it's an incredible experience. And I think it is quite remarkable the role that you play in helping so many of our students, executive format students, but also our full-time students, understand and believe in themselves and really helping them take this important next step in their careers. From where I sit, I want you to know how much I appreciate all that you do, your ideas, your endless enthusiasm, your just great perspective, so many things that I value. So I feel so lucky to have you as a colleague.
Well, it's my pleasure. I always say that Darden's a very easy school to recruit for.
Yeah.
You know, people always ask, like, well, why'd you come? Or, like, why have you stayed? And a lot of it has to do with the fact that, like, when you talk to prospective students about the school, there is this real natural alignment between what the school says it is and what it actually is. Like, from an admissions standpoint, I think it's obviously what you want.
Right.
It's much more stressful if what you're talking about, like, it's maybe not quite it, but, you know. And the challenge for us is a lot of the things that I think, you know, Darden does well or we do well as a community, they turn out to be things that other schools talk about, but the manifestation of those things, what does community feel like here? Relationships with your classmates, what does the classroom feel like? All these kinds of things, I think they're qualitatively different here. One of the many reasons why we think you should come to our events and meet the people and come to class and spend some time interacting with our current students. I think that hits people pretty quickly. I mean, certainly know that in the executive formats when people come for those weekend visits in Roslyn or Charlottesville, they're struck by how well the students seem to know each other, how familiar they are, how it feels very warm. And, you know, that's a testament to the people who choose this as a, as a learning experience, but it's also a testament to what happens once they're in that learning experience. So
you give great advice to prospective students about the MBA and the potential there. How about some of your other interests? You mentioned the library, public transportation, but you're also a huge movie and also music fan. So for those who are not aware, so Brett plays the guitar. He was a longtime DJ in Lexington. He has been performing, maybe not as much recently, although we need to get him back out there. But he plays gigs around Lexington. He was playing in Charlottesville for a while at a wonderful, warm and community establishment in the Fry Springs neighborhood. He's a man of many talents and great at trivia, great at knowing what's going on in the world. So what are you listening to these days? What music? What bands should we be?
Wow. I've been on a bit of a nostalgia trip lately. So kind of gone through this thing where I don't know if you have this experience where certain music is just like, it has so powerfully evocative of like a particular moment in your life. I felt like when I first went to law school, I think junior, senior year of college, and then those first couple years of law school, there's so many great records coming out, and I've spent a lot of time with music that was released during this period. So that was a period of time. To date myself a little bit, I'm 37, so if you're wondering what that was, it was the garage rock revival. It was the White Stripes and the Strokes, and sort of Coldplay was there in the background. I remember right before they became huge, they played Charlotte, North Carolina, the Grady Cole Center.
Okay.
Where my dad had actually gone to see concerts. They don't have concerts there anymore.
Okay.
But Coldplay,
full circle.
Coldplay played there. The Strokes also came there. I feel like that was such a wonderful, wonderful period of time for music. If you were really, and the Killers record came out not so long after that. So this is not the trendiest thing in the world. But I think growing up, sort of really coming of age in the 2000, 2003 period, 2004, maybe five as well.
So you're revisiting.
Spotify makes all of this really possible.
It does.
It's been a good year for music, of course. Snail Mail. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you are into, I guess it's really a her, but it's kind of a them. It's kind of a D.C. area, Baltimore-based band.
No. Here in Charlottesville.
It's all right. So
missing out.
Hop Along as well from the Philadelphia metro area. Japanese Breakfast. Let's see. Boy Genius. Have you listened to them yet?
No.
Lucy Dacus and Phoebe Bridgers.
Sorry, I don't have my notepad.
Oh, that's all right.
To write all these down.
Well, that's a super group. There. So, but there's just so much music; it's overwhelming. So I find myself going in reverse because it's easier. It's like preserved in amber a little bit more. But I would say, even more so than music, I probably see more movies than anything.
I know.
Anything.
All right, I was going to get to
that. Well, I just spent this past weekend, saw two movies.
Okay.
Brand new Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga movie. Yes. Star is Born, I would say.
Are you going to give it a review?
Yeah, I'd say watch it.
Okay.
Watch it.
Ringing endorsement there.
All right. So here's the thing. I think it's hard. This movie, the hype, the movie, it's been really, really hyped. And I think a part of that is also the fact that Lady Gaga is really good and she's just this massive star.
Right.
She's still 27 million records. You forget the scale of her stardom, but like she has major fans. And, you know, even her fans, I mean, the way that they approached this movie, I mean, they were negatively reviewing Venom, which is the other big movie that came out this past weekend, to ensure that A Star is Born would rise to the top of the, and it would. I mean, I have pretty confident that it'll be there. There were a lot of people when I went to see it. Bradley Cooper's directorial debut.
Yes.
Very good. I think people have questioned whether his character, the kind of music that he makes, would actually be as popular as he seems to be in the movie.
Okay.
It's kind of like this, it's not too far removed from the Black Crowes, like a band that we've discussed before. So, but it's, I mean, Lady Gaga is great in it. I think she's really the star of the movie, yeah. Which is fitting since it's really her story. A little bit of a quibble with, like, so she becomes this character, Allie. Mm. Like, I was like, that's the name? That's the one name, Allie? So mm-hmm. I thought that maybe they could have worked a little bit harder coming up with, like, a... Like, it doesn't quite work for me as, like, a single name artist. You think about Madonna.
Yes, okay.
Prince.
Right.
Allie.
Yeah.
So, but
no offense to all the Allies out there.
And my cousin is an Allie. But, I think just as I was looking at the movie, I was like, man.
Right.
I think that maybe could have spent a little bit more time with it. But it's the fourth time the movie's been made. So it's not a new story.
Gosh, I don't think I realized four times.
Yeah. So, and then also, Monsters and Men.
Okay.
Which is interesting. It's a movie about race and police in New York, and sort of coalesces, brings a lot of different threads, sort of popular commentary, mm-hmm. things that are going on in our society right now together. There's been obviously quite a few movies that have sort of focused on these things. Sorry to Bother You, Black Klansman.
Yeah.
So it's well done. It won the Sundance Movie Award.
Okay.
Back when all of that was going on. And so now it's coming to theaters. My favorite movie of the year is a small movie that it wasn't in theaters for very long, and I don't even know if you can find it right now. Leave No Trace, which is about a veteran who is living unhoused in a state park outside of Portland with his daughter, and sort of the struggle that they go through, mm-hmm. right? You know, he's dealing with PTSD. There's a lot, and sort of in between. It's never verbalized, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, sort of has helicopter noises and things like that mm-hmm. sound like conflict come back. You can see the stress reaction. He's having a hard time rejoining normal society. And as part of a veterans community that is struggling with that exact same issue. But the challenge for him versus some of those other folks is he has essentially a teenage daughter
yeah.
who wants a more conventional life, and obviously is tremendously talented and been raised in this very unconventional way, but is like off the charts intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
And so their paths diverge, mm-hmm. right, in the movie. And it's very moving, very affecting. You have a couple of, musical cameos from Michael Hurley and Marissa Anderson, two Portland area minor folk acts, but nevertheless great. And
how you're weaving in love of music into your love of film.
Well,
there
that
you go.
Yeah, that one for sure. And I will say I'm extremely excited about Barry Jenkins' If Beale Street Could Talk. So Barry Jenkins, director of Moonlight.
Okay.
Did you see that one? So good. Oh, man. Everybody's got to see it. So beautiful. I think, the part of the movie, I mean, it's a great story, and there's a nice interview that Barry Jenkins just did for the culture issue of the New York Times.
Okay.
About, so he grew up in the housing projects in Miami, went to Florida State,
mm-hmm.
studied media studies, and Moonlight was in a lot of ways sort of him telling his story, but through someone else's story. His mm-hmm. mother struggled with drug addiction, and it's a fantastic movie, mostly because it's a movie that forces you to like sit with the characters and sort of feel what they're feeling. There's not a tremendous amount of dialogue
mm-hmm.
in it, and If Beale Street Could Talk is a James Baldwin story. And I think James Baldwin is one of these people that's been in the national conversation so much because I think everybody's like, man, this guy, what he was talking about in the 50s and 60s is actually exactly what's going on right now, the cultural observations he had. And I saw a trailer for it this past week, and, I mean, it looks fantastic. So I'll pretty much see anything that Barry Jenkins does. But that looks very strong, and it was actually I was in Toronto not so long ago.
Oh, that's right.
And they were showing the movie.
Okay.
I sadly did not make it to the Toronto International Film Festival. Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga had just been there.
Oh, man,
just missed them.
Oh, But
ships
you
passing
replaced
in the night. Yeah, that's
the next
right.
star rolled that, through
that's
town.
Exactly. That's the
Ron
way I like
Wilcox
to think about
and
it.
Brett Twitty.
Yes, for the poets and quants.
Yes.
Center court. So.
All right. So we've touched on film. Yeah. We touched on music. Another love is sports. So Clemson football.
Yeah, baseball.
Looking good.
Yeah, Clemson football 63-3 this past week.
Whoa.
In Wake Forest. My mom and dad, as they want to do, were at the game.
Yeah.
So I've been following, waiting for basketball season to start as well.
Yeah. UNC fan.
It's not easy being a UNC fan here at the University of Virginia.
But your shirt today, you seem to have that Carolina blue
that's
going
right.
on.
It's ideal for podcasting.
Oh, yeah.
And then, so baseball season, of course, I've been excited
your
about.
Your teams aren't going for
No,
who's
sadly.
Who's going to win?
That's a great question.
So for those out there, his teams, his first love, the Orioles. But he's become a Nats fan.
Oof.
Yeah? No? Okay, sorry.
Well, I like the Nats.
Okay, sorry.
If one of our current students who works for the Nationals is listening, I do like the Nats. Just not on the same level. Not on the same level. But I've been to many a Nats games. So I can't say that I fully embrace the Nats, but I do love going to Nats Park.
So,
just like a little bit less than going to Camden Yards. So it's been a rough year to be an Orioles fan. I think last game of the season, which I was able to attend, thanks to the generosity of one of my friends who may be doing this podcast interview, I was struck by the fact it was the first time they beat the Astros all year.
Okay.
And also struck by the fact they were about 60-plus games out of first place at that point. So.
But the weather couldn't have been better.
It's a beautiful day.
Clear skies.
Never a bad day to be at
Camden Yards. You got a handsome tote bag.
That is a duffel bag.
Duffel bag.
Handsome
sorry.
Duffel
not
bag.
A tote bag.
Does anyone need more tote bags?
No, you're right. Sorry.
But what you don't have a lot of these days are duffel bags.
Duffel bag.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, big Orioles fan. Also like the Giants. That would be the San Francisco Giants. Mm-hmm. Carolina Panthers fan. They just won 33-31. Beat the New York Giants on a last-second 63-yard field goal.
Yeah.
Graham Gano, who unfortunately is a Florida State grad, but these things happen.
Yeah.
Well,
I think that might bring us to the end of our time together. We haven't touched on so much more that makes up Brett Twitty. He's very well read. We didn't have a time today to discuss what he's reading, but that just means we'll have to do this again.
That's right. Well, part deux.
Part deux.
We'll come back for it. But Whitney, thank you so much for doing this. It's a real treat and a pleasure.
Brett, the pleasure is all mine. I think it's pretty great that you created this podcast, that you are celebrating 50 episodes. Really phenomenal and some really great work. But thank you so much for all you do for our prospective students, for our current students, our alumni. You are an amazing colleague and grateful to have the opportunity to work with you each and every day.
It's my pleasure.